Blog Talk Radio.
This is our common ground, alternative activist empowerment talk radio, speaking truth to power and ourselves.
Who are you? You don't know? Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? What language did you speak then?
As you honor our forefathers and foremothers, I urge you to honor our living heroes. When you honor the names of Nat Turner, Harriet Tubman, and Malcolm X, I urge you to honor the names of Geronimo, Gijaga, Sundiata, Okoli, Mutulu Shakur, and Mumia Abu-Jamal.
America's chickens coming home to roost. Violence begets violence. Hatred begets hatred. And terrorism begets terrorism.
Our common ground, speaking truth to power and ourselves.
I'm Janice Graham, and I'll be listening for you. Thank you for being with us. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
brother. Don't make no sense for us to be arguing now. Time is right up on us now, brother. Don't make no sense for us to be arguing now. All of your children and all of my children are gonna have to pay for our mistakes someday. Yes, and until then, may peace guide your way. Peace go to brother, wherever you go. Peace go with your brother.
And thank you for joining us here at Our Common Ground tonight. I'm Janice Graham, and welcoming all of you. If you'd like to join us in our chat room, you can do so at blogtalkradio.com/OCG. Tonight at Our Common Ground, it's open mic Saturday night. And our number is 347-838-9852. We opened up our program tonight with the great and late and missed Gil Scott Herring. We even missed him when he was living. We were so pleased to see him emerge in his later days. If you do not know Gil Scott Herring, we suggest that you Google and find out about not only about his music, but about the source of his message in his life as a warrior who struggled hard to understand America. Tonight at Our Common Ground, I'm bringing as host some very hopefully stimulating thoughts about a number of things, but most important on my mind tonight is where and how we enter into this new political stage, how we begin to regroup in the second term of President Barack Obama, what changes we need to make in response to the changes we need him to make. The re-election of President Obama has created a new political frontier, one which defines his re-election as a benchmark that very well may frame a critical baseline for political empowerment outcomes for racial groups in this country. There are some who may mistakenly underestimate altogether the value and the weight of your vote or the vote for President Obama as a tool for political empowerment, setting the stage for negotiation and arbitration in the midterm 2014 and beyond. Vote in America is still voice. And one of the things that has not been so troubling to me as I think critically to assess is the mainstream media and the Latino community and the Republican Party and the GOP translating, and the political pundits, most of all, translating the way in which this re-election came about. On the other hand, I think as black people, we have not taken a serious look as to what happened, why it happened, and why other people are claiming victors in it. And there are reasons why we are not doing that. That's on my mind tonight. The other is how Republicans, and whether or not we like them, whether or not we think they're mad, and they are indeed part of the mad parade in America, and whether or not the impact that the vitriolic kinds of public discourse about an attack against this president, which have been racially based and have, in my opinion, not only been about him, but about us, and how it will play out in the strategies that we put together for the coming 4 years. You know, Karl Rove is blaming Hurricane Sandy for Romney's loss. Bill O'Reilly says people want stuff, and President Obama will give them stuff, so they voted for him. The drugster says that maybe the Republican Party needs to hand out free birth control in order to win the women's vote. And the question becomes whether or not Republicans fail to learn the lessons of this election. I think they will not. I hope that they will not. Charles Krautheimer, for instance, says that Republicans need to offer amnesty in order to win the Hispanic vote. And Hannity said that the Republicans time to start nominating disciplined, principled conservatives. I don't know who they are. Maybe you do. And I hope that you will engage with me in this discussion at 347-838-9852. There are a couple of questions on this matter of what these new coalitions that are being assigned the victors have to, what that is about. There are some very, very uncomfortable truths in some of what is being said about some new black-brown coalition that has to be defined for me, which defeated Romney. And we need to talk about that. This country, by way of the media, has established the emergence of Hispanics as the country's largest minority group, who will have the greatest impact on national politics. And I'm wondering if, in fact, it will have an impact, this new narrative, this new framework, will also have an impact on the empowerment of black politics. You know, I am very deeply suspicious of any claims regarding some natural relationship between African Americans and other minority groups. As our guest last week, Chauncey DeVega, reminded us, race is not destiny. A shared status as people of color, and those of you who know this program understand, I think we ought to eliminate that language altogether. it says little about our identity as a group in this country and our history. And if Hispanics are inaugurated as the minority voice in this country, what does that mean for shared interests with Black Americans? And what does it mean for us as a community where there are no mutually shared political priorities? Now, one of the things that comes to mind for me is that there is an evolving relationship between Blacks and Latinos in this country. But it is evolving. In 25 years or 20 years, the Hispanic population will be twice as large as the African American population. And we know that there is going to be a strategy of those who oppose political empowerment for any minority group, utilizing that to disenfranchise whatever political empowerment we might be able to garner. And I think that what we have to be is very cautious about what is being said about what happened in this election. I'll give you some numbers. Over 93% of African Americans voted for President Obama. 73% of Asian Americans and 71% of Latinos. Yet here we have a media who wants to purport that it was the Latino community, and I think that there is some leadership within that community who are adopting this line, who would say that but for that 71% of Latinos, there would have not, there would be, we would be facing President Romney elect. But I want to remind you that 27% of all Latino votes cast in this country were Latino, were votes for Romney. It is lower than the way in which that community voted for President George W. Bush in 2004, which was 44%, and in 2008 for Arizona Senator John McCain, who has really lost his mind, 31%. But it informs the discussion that we need to have about the evolving relationship, and you know, it's almost like we have the experience, we understand the experience in our community that white people are always looking for divide and conquer factors. And I think that that's what we're facing, we're looking at now. Divide and conquer factors. So how does what the Latino community in the past have done have the positioning of their voter electoral power, and I'm going to keep saying it again, 44% in 2004 for George W. Bush, and 31% in 2008 for John McCain, 71% for Barack Obama in 2012. In 2008, President Obama received 67% of the Latino vote. Latinos made up 9% of the electorate in 2008, with 19.5 million people eligible to vote. Today, there are nearly 24 million Hispanics eligible to vote. The vote of registered Latinos has increased, therefore, by 26% in the last 4 years. And that was reported by the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials. And as early as November 8th, many segments of the Latino community were declaring themselves as the deciding factor in the re-election of President Obama. I focus on this 27% of the Latino vote supporting Mitt Romney, 44% George W. Bush, and 31% for John McCain, because I think it is reflective of what we must examine in looking at whatever the evolving political relationship is. Thank you all for being with us. This is Our Common Ground. Our number is 347-838-9852. And tonight, I'm putting on the table as part of Saturday night open mic the notion that we need to look at what is the privilege that you must gain in voter numbers. What is the privilege of those numbers, and whether or not we should be asking our Latino brothers and sisters to reconsider their count. The other thing that I've been talking about is whether or not the Republicans are going to fail to learn the lessons of this election. They've been doing an awful lot of talking about how they can regain their footing in this country as a force to be reckoned with on the national stage. My concern at this point is Republicans will refuse to learn any lesson from this election, but will instead try to win through other methods, because they're talking about how you get the vote rather than how you win the vote. And, excuse me, voter suppression didn't work for Republicans this time. But I fear that it won't stop them from trying again, and the next time they may have their game plan in a better place. And I also fear that rather than moderating their message, Republicans will instead go after the Electoral College and make it proportional rather than winning take all. I also fear, and you should too, that Republicans will just find new and creative ways to steal future elections. They can't win any other way in the face of the electoral statistics unless they change their core message. They're not going to change their core message, and they are refusing to do so or to acknowledge that not only is their core message flawed, but it also cost them this election. So they only had one choice. We had a civil war already, states' rights lost, the U.S. government won. Republicans need to stop trying to refight the Civil War, but they are, as Dr. Matthew Johnson said on his program a couple of weeks ago, they will not concede. if Republicans want to regain power, they simply need to adjust their message. Then the question becomes to me, if they adjust their message, who's going to fall for it? You're listening to Open Mic Saturday night at Our Common Ground. And we're going to go to our phones. 405, you're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for your call.
Well, hello, Janice. How are you this evening?
The Dean Doc. I mean, you know, everybody calls you the Dean. I call you the Don. How are you, Don?
I might be the Don because I'm armed and dangerous at times.
No, we always say not armed, but dangerous.
There you go. Not armed, but dangerous.
What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I'm in the same boat as the rest of us as far as the frustration, the aggravation of the racial perspective toward blacks in the United States of America. I'm getting very tired of these people who are, as in this state that I live in, Oklahoma, ban affirmative action, and do everything, you know, Colburn and his little cadre up there do everything they can to make it just impossible for blacks to achieve any measure of success in this society in spite of the contributions that we have made to this country. I'm tired of these idiots and these people who call themselves citizens of the United States and they believe in a God and country and they are so patriotic that they wear the flag on their sleeves and on their shirts and everywhere else, and yet they want to succeed from the Union. And I'm tired of the lack of response from our friends who are white, who stand by passively and allow these individuals to have their way.
By our friends, what do you mean?
Our white friends
that
we have who have been with us silently. Some of us, some have been with us in the struggle and have paid with their lives also. But the vast majority are the silent minority that will not speak against loudly in their churches and synagogues and temples and wherever they go against the injustice that that has been perpetrated and the mistreatment against the blacks in this country. I'm talking about us. I'm not talking about getting some liaison with the Hispanics or others because we need to fight our own fight. How can we ally ourselves and align ourselves with others, which I would like to do, when we can't even get along together among ourselves, Janice?
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, now I'm following you.
And so, you know, the fact that we have President Obama, yes, it gives us a little, you know, a light of hope. Where heretofore our light was fading, and you know, there's a little sparkle in my eye, and you know, I get a little. Oh, I guess boastful that we can say that this man is an African American. He's a citizen. He looks like me in some aspects, and so. But the fact of the matter is that he can't do a whole lot for us. You know, he's doing what he can under the circumstances. I mean, he's made it easier for black colleges to get a little bit more money, and he's made it so that Pell Grants are available to our children. And there's some other things that he's done, but there's some things that he's done also that I feel that's hurt us. So I'm not looking to President Obama to do a whole lot for me. He cannot make employers hire us. That's for sure. He can't stop the police brutality, the profiling that we endure. He can't do that. He cannot change the images that we see, distorted, racist images that we see directed our way by the media and the movies that that comes out of Hollywood and other places. And he certainly can't change the rap music, the lyrics, and the that the rappers write about denigrating our race and our women. He cannot change, Janice, the disparity in the healthcare system totally. One thing he did do that no other president has ever done was give us some measure of health care, which I commend him greatly, and I thank him for that. But there's a lot to be said there on health care. We have to do things for ourselves. He can't make us respect one another, and he can't make other races respect us. He cannot make us do business, shop, and do business with one another. You know, we have to do that. He can't make our wealthy black men and women marry blacks. You know, when you look at our athletes and all of our entertainers, they want to go to the other side. See? And so he can't deal with that.
And by that you mean that it diminishes our ability to build strong, economically strong communities. Is that what you mean?
Yes, viable communities. And invest in our own communities and in our own black businesses. You know, most of this money is turning right back around, going to, back to the system of white supremacy.
Well, let me ask you. You've talked extensively about what he cannot do. If you were asked to participate on a team of African Americans in this country to develop a list of things that you believe reasonably that he could affect, what would be on that list, Don?
I would direct my list would be first in the area of funding education in the public schools to where we could get skills that's needed for our youth that may not want to go to college or may not can go to college. You know, let's give them some trades. You know, let's get that back into the public schools. Let's get the money into the public schools to where black children can learn to read and articulate the King's English. Let them become bilingual. And let them pursue careers and other vocations. I would have on my list for him to equip them to where they are competitive and their skills are needed in this society. Not reducing us to a state of dependents and beggars. That's what I would ask this president to do with some of these federal dollars. But moreover, Janice, what I'm looking at is what we need to be doing for ourselves. We can do these things I'm talking about. You know, we can leave living trusts and wills, those of us who have property for our children, instead of letting it go into probate, and then the state takes half of the estate and leaves the family feuding against one another, which I've seen all too often, even in my own family tree. A little pittance is left, and then they're at each other's throats with damn near guns over arguing over that because we have failed to adequately plan for the are leaving this transitioning this this earth.
Mm-hmm.
So these are some things that, we can do along with what he can do for us, you know.
Well, you know, you mentioned, and you know, education is one of the things that's always on my mind. And you mentioned revamping, reinventing how we educate our children to meet the needs of the contemporary economy. But isn't that a local issue?
Well, I'm talking about an evolving world. I'm talking about learning the languages of the world, such as, like he's, look at the president. He's the perfect example. Little Tasha, or whatever her little name is, she's growing now. She's learning and can speak Mandarin Chinese. Where she communicated with the prime minister of China or whatever his title is, who came over here in his own language, you know, and so
yeah,
I mean
that's
a hint. I mean, if we can get our children to be even deal with Spanish, the basic tenets of Spanish, at least conversational Spanish, to where they can compete and understand their Latino community, which is made up of a vast group of differences. They're not all the same and think the same either. So we can at least communicate with them and understand what's going on and compete. I mean, after all, let's look at the demographics in the country and you see what's happening. So it's on us to deal with that problem, not the president. It's on us as so-called community leaders and the so-called civil rights leaders and the ones that don't want you saying nothing about the daggone president. Don't criticize him. So they become the conduit to keep us under the so-called at bay from the president, and then they're rewarded with different positions and other, you know, things that enrich their goals and their family's goals. So, I'm directing this diatribe at us, those of us who have the means to make change. I'm thinking seriously about taking this state into court in reference to the banning of affirmative action.
Well, Michigan on Friday, by the way, had passed a law to ban affirmative action based on race, and the courts turned it back.
Absolutely. I'm fully aware of that, and I intend to get that brief.
If you're interested in really getting your community involved in that, the Barbara Arnwine, who's been on this program a number of times, the executive director of the Lawyers Committee, I'm sure they would be very interested in hearing from people, individual citizens who want to help them organize in states where affirmative action has been banned.
Well, that's good. I certainly will get a hold of her.
All you have to do is go to their website and get their number.
Yeah, absolutely.
See, that's where we have to begin to I mean, one of the things that really struck me and has me on this, how the mainstream has embrace this notion that the Latino community reelected should have be the victors of the for the reelection of President Barack Obama was that the day on we voted on the 6th and on November 7th, the advocates and organizers on the issue of immigration was in front of the White House, and we were not.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, that's because of our lack of, involvement in doing what we need to do. You know, I mean, if I have to do this by myself and file a lawsuit by myself, which I probably won't have to, but I can, certainly can, and get the ball rolling and get the attention directed here and then get people on board once the ball is rolling, because it just looks like it may be rolling in our direction as far as the Supreme Court supporting affirmative action. Certainly the arguments that was put forth in Michigan are worthy
damning as they relate to Oklahoma. Absolutely.
Sure. I mean, all I need to do is get the.
But you know, Don, one of the things I've been saying, something's been ringing in my head all week, and it is about our unwillingness to recognize, to affirm that as a people, we are victims. I mean, we back away. People say, oh, you play the race card, you want to be a victim. Well, hell, we are victims. Because we see the immediacy, the contemporary evidence of slavery every day. And that is in the notion that we still, as a community, haven't understood how you manifest the principle that education is everything. I mean, we're all going around and saying it. We even have people who are dropped out of school in the eighth grade. We have crackheads who go around telling kids to get their education. But we still don't understand what that means. And it goes back to what you just talked about in regard to Sasha Obama. Because you know what? The Obamas can hire a tutor to teach their children to speak Mandarin Chinese. But we have the ability, in the same way that we spend $400 and $500 on the new iPhone or the whatever Nike's, I hate to use brand names, but Nike and whoever else, sneakers and Xboxes.
Going to the track, going betting, going gambling. Yes, we
exactly.
do, Janet.
We have the
capital. We spend the money.
Exactly.
We spend the money. That's a known fact. So,
exactly.
But it takes individuals like you and I who get fed up to where we can say, okay, it's time now for us to take this, get personal. You see, and I'm looking at here this state here. And although I've been involved with many groups, I've been involved with dealing with the police department here, its hierarchy, and being on councils and committees and all that stuff, Janice. You know what I mean? Doing the so-called right thing, community work, and all that stuff, but. Even so, I've been there doing things like that 3 or 4, 5, 6, 7 years, and I look back and I say, now what's really changed?
Mm-hmm.
Not much.
Not much. I mean, if you look at the past 3.5 years, the racial attacks, the racial discourse in the public square, we have resorted back as a country to the 1950s, where white people have made it very clear that they want to continue the system of white supremacy, that they want the public policy to reflect that. And that is in an environment where too many Americans have accepted the notion, accepted it, not just acknowledged it, but accepted that our government is has been bought by corporatists, and it is actually corporations that run America and has taken over government.
Yeah, absolutely. I was listening to the Lincoln's Gettysburg Address today, and I said, Lord have mercy. He wouldn't recognize America today.
But the other part of it, too, is that we have bought into way too many myths without, which is why it is so important for us to really know history. And I'm going to hit you with something, okay? Let me hit you with something for a minute. This is a quote. I will say then that I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the white and black races, that I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of making voters or jurors of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. And I will say in addition to this that there is a physical difference between the white and black races, which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together on terms of social and political equality. And inasmuch as they cannot so live, while they do remain together, there must be the position of superior and inferior, and I, as much as any other man, am in favor of having the superior position assigned to the white race. Please, Don, guess who said it.
It sounds to me like my man Abe.
Abraham Lincoln.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
But
and
unless
what,
we do our study, unless we understand, that was Abraham Lincoln.
It sure was.
And it was the corporations and the capitalists in this country who arbitrated the Emancipation Proclamation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Abraham Lincoln who compromised.
Absolutely was a compromise.
Over
and
the issue of slavery and the backroom deal, just like the backroom deals that President Obama and John Boehner are cooking up today.
Right now,
it is about what will be the future.
Yes,
I've seen that
smile on his face. Didn't you see that on when he came out, President Obama, to address us? About we need to talk and come together and agree. I've seen a little smile on his face about he knowing that the deal is being made.
That's right.
And so it's up, Janice. See, you and I have been privileged to have been able to compete and obtain a slot in one of their schools, in one of the highest professions in this country, which is the law profession, and have been able to graduate from their schools with a so-called degree, doctorate degree, in jurisprudence. Now, what are we going to do with that? You know, what are we actually going to do with that? How come I'm sitting here and the ship is sinking and the sun is setting on our people, and I have the opportunity to utilize my knowledge and my education to at least begin to even get into the system and try to get redress, even though I know the system is corrupted.
Well, you know, one of the things that I have been purporting for the last 10 years is that we've got to go back to basics. And the basics are, how do we eat? Where do we sleep? and how do we prepare a future for our children? And I think at the beginning of this discussion with you, that one of the things that you identified is that we have got to force this government to provide the resources so that our children are properly positioned by their education to be successful.
Yes, their education, and I'm going to get off, and maybe someone else wants to get on because it's getting close to quitting time here. And but I'm seriously, you know, I'm going to pursue the and review the briefs and things that were filed in this case and see if I can fit it here to get Oklahoma involved in this also. But you know, yes, we need to do that, and we need to education, and I'm talking about trade schools, you know, where plumbers, mechanics, anything that where we can, you know, do our own thing like we used to, you know, business or stores and et cetera. But, Janice, I thank you. There's not enough time. I came in late. You know, I'm sorry I was busy, but at least I got here. You know, and I showed up, so I'm tiptoeing out with my little finger like we do in church.
It's good to have talked to you. I think that you have opened up a line of thinking and a basis for us to move in the next hour and begin to think about how we break out of our oppression.
Yes, absolutely, and we can
do it,
and
one
we can do
person
it
at a time. We
yeah,
can
we,
do it.
Yeah, we can do it. We can be successful at accomplishing this. It doesn't take a whole lot. It takes somebody who's willing, who has the opportunity, who's knowledgeable, and has the grace of God to get the ball rolling. So you know, this forum here gives us an opportunity to come and discuss things, vent our frustrations, and talk among our peers and our family as to, you know, what's going on and what we can do. So let me see what old Don can do here in Oklahoma.
Okay,
and,
Don.
I'll contact, you know.
Updated about what it is that you're doing. And I know one of the things I'm doing, very simple things. My grandchildren are getting Rosetta Stone for the holidays.
Great, great. Wonderful.
One's going to get Chinese because that continues his studies in Chinese, and the other is going to get Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's where we have to use our resources. Thank you so much, Don. And,
thank you. I'll get back in my chair. And,
okay.
And hopefully I can sit there without raising my hand again.
Well, if you feel you have to, it's open mic Saturday night at our common ground.
All right.
And our number is 347-838-9852. We've been talking to Doc Don from Oklahoma, and he has raised some very, very interesting issues, and one of them is you know, what you do as an individual. He's also looked at, you know, who has the onus to act, and what the limitations of a president or an administration has. I've been raising the issue earlier about what does our vote mean and why would the Latino community begin to claim that but for their vote, which was 71% of their votes went to President Obama, claiming a new political empowerment. Now, it's real clear to me that in 20 years, this Latino community will be the largest minority in this country. Our number is 347-838-9852. We're at the almost at the top of the hour. We're going to take a little break, but before we do, you know, people say we need to get educated, and that's the problem. I want to suggest why education is not the be-all and end-all answer, even though it is one of the resources that we need to have. People, yeah, we don't get the resources that white children get. Our children face quite a bit of resistance and oppression in American public schools. And we say that if only our children would only study harder, and if we would do better at turning off the television more often, then they could learn and get ahead. But this mixes up some important truths or some very wrong conclusions. The truth is that this system has consistently denied a good education to black children and continues to do so today, beginning with the execution of slaves who taught other slaves to read. And today, most African-American children are confined to prison-like inner-city schools, which get much fewer resources and in which the true history and dynamics of society and the world are covered up, and there is little, if any, attempt to instill critical or creative thinking. And these schools send African-American children the message in ways spoken and unspoken that there is no real future for them in this society, and it is a further crime of this system that many black youth end up buying into the system's lies that they are inferior, turn off to their own potential to learn, and in doing so, turn away from the wider world of knowledge and science and history. This is Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, and our number here in Our Common Ground, open mic Saturday night, 347-838-9852, speaking truth to power and ourselves. We'll be right back to take your call.
Just like the city that stagger on the coastline, and a nation that just can't stand much more. Like the forest buried beneath the highway, never had a chance to grow. Never had a chance to grow. And now it's winter, winter in America. Yes, and all of the heroes have been killed, sent away. The people know it's winter. Winter in America.
Republican Congress is looking to defund parts of Dodd-Frank. In the face of these losses, of this risk-taking, why aren't the Democrats out pointing the fingers and saying they will be responsible should there be a need for government to step in with another bailout of banks because of this risk, about of these risky derivatives and trading? Why aren't the Democrats pointing the fingers at the people who are standing in the way of reforming the financial institution? That's malpractice, malfeasance. And to me, it just simply seems, and I know because they're getting money from these same financial institutions to stall, to get this into... But if Republicans are playing cutthroat politics, why are the Democrats playing that? And why can't they be on the offensive? And that's the first thing. Here's the second charge. You've got the Republicans beating this old message of debt. You got Mitt Romney standing in front of a debt clock now. And that will be the narrative. And the Democrats, you don't see this coming? You don't see this narrative coming as they force another debt fight? As they...
The best of political talkback, common sense, right from the concrete. Urban, progressive, politics. 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 Friday nights at Truthworks Network. 10 p.m. Alpho drills down deep the lies, the conspiracies in politics. It's just damn politics.
The Alpho Show.
The most powerful force on the earth, a soul of fire.
When oppression is profound, in order to live, in order to locate, in order to feel oneself, unfortunately the reality is the oppressed makes certain concessions, certain mental, psychic, and spiritual concessions. In this moment in history, in this very hour, we are still very much in a part of and on that river. We still feel its rhythms, its tide, and we're certainly captive to its current. I think, in a sense, it is very much time to call for the fire. I think it is very much time for African Americans to begin to seriously rearticulate our ongoing struggle and about social justice. Where spirit matters.
Lies. Common, riveting, talk-free.
Only on Truthworks Network.
Your Wednesdays just got better.
Soul of Fire with Dr. Matthew V. Johnson. Wednesdays, 10 p.m., where spirit matters.
Go into Libya if you want to. The Libyans do not want foreign occupation on their land. And when you make that kind of move, if you're not careful, you'll unite the Libyan people against you. What did you do in Waco? What did you do when your people rose up? Did you talk them out of it? No, they had weapons, you bombed them. What did you do in Philadelphia with the movement? Did you toss them out of their home, or did you bomb them? We didn't hear any outcry from you religious hypocrites that love the lives of human beings. You're a liar and a hypocrite. And I warn my brother, don't you let these wicked demons move you in a direction that will absolutely ruin your future with your people in Africa and throughout the world. They don't like the way you handle Mubarak. They don't like the way you're handling the situation in the Arab world. So I would advise you to be careful and move with wisdom and skill. My advice.
Police to try to raise up your voice and sing. So be, stay off my back, or I will attack, and you don't want that.
Our Common Ground. Talk that matters. I'm Janice Graham, and I'll be listening for you.
Here at Our Common Ground Open Mic Saturday night. Our number is 347-838-9852. We do encourage you to join Dr. Matthew V. Johnson on Wednesday night, Soul of Fire, because that's what it is. And on Friday night, the best of advanced urban progressive politics. It does not get any better in the pushback and the facts. It's the truth. On the political scene with Alpha of the Alpha Show, both aired at 10 p.m. TruthWorks Network. And as we always do on Open Mic Saturday night, it's up to you at 347-838-9852. And we're going to go to our phone, 765, you're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for your call.
This is Steve from Indiana. How's it going?
Steve from Indiana, good to hear from you. How are you, brother?
Another day, another dollar. You know, I was recently watching a YouTube video by Alan Greenspan. And, folks, you can look this up. You go to YouTube, type in Greenspan, government cuts key to debt fix. And for the first time, Greenspan is ringing the alarm bell. You know, we really do have a serious deficit and debt problem in this country. Normally Greenspan, you know, when people ask him, CNN, they were mad at him too. Normally when they ask him, you know, about running a deficit, and he says yes, as he said, you know, ever since the 80s. But now he is stating that it's unprecedented, and that the United, we really do have to get our debt and our deficit down soon rather than later, you know, and that and so let's open mic, call in, talk about that. But you know, because for years, you know, people always said, well, Greenspan doesn't see nothing wrong with it. Well, he's not saying that now. So, you know, and I understand, you know, we got baby boomers retiring and everything, but this debt and deficit issue, and it's more than just the fiscal cliff. He's dealing with the entire problem, you know. And you guys can watch it yourself, but it really is a threat. And even the Pentagon,
it was
even
a statement that he made about maybe 2 years ago.
No, this video was made yesterday.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
The CNN money. And
okay.
CNN has like 5,000 videos on YouTube. And what it is that as far as capital investments, that is down because we have trillions on the sidelines. And that capital investment that's not there because there's uncertainty, that is causing productivity to go down in the United States. And that is causing a major problem. A lot of people are investing in gold. Like, gold is at like $8 trillion right now. All the world's value of all the world's gold is at like $8 trillion. So people are not investing because they don't know what their tax is going to look like, the economy is going to look like. But a lot of, and even the Pentagon stated the debt and the deficit is the greatest threat to the United States of America. And it's the first, I've been watching Greenspan since I was a child. This is the first time I've seen Greenspan not recommend running a deficit. And so, you know, this is going to cause some controversy.
You know,
but I understand. And like I said, it's going to be hard. He even stated that it's better to go through a recession than to raise taxes. And so it's going to be our future.
Well,
and I recommend go ahead.
I just want to say that one of the things is that Greenspan is changing his tune because there is no accountability for him relative to his performance when he could have done something about this. The other is that raising taxes is not the only strategy that this country can use in lieu of spending to provide subsistence to the citizens of this country. I'll give you an example. If you had, say, 5 credit cards and you took one balance and put on another credit card, a prudent thing to be would to be put a balance from to look at the interest rate of the credit card you're going to transfer that debt to. The other is to cut spending in the areas that are of no essential value to the expenditures that have to be made. I mean, if we're talking about your personal budget, we're talking about food, transportation, and housing. You understand what I'm saying? So,
well, absolutely. The thing is that we don't have a lot of time, and what I don't recommend for the black community, this is when markets crash, this is going to be the best investment opportunities of a lifetime. And we need more building done in the black community. We need more elites to be black. We need more financial security in the black community. And when the stock market, when these markets crash, it is going to be the best investment opportunities for those of us who still, fortunately, still have a job. There are going to be millions laid off. Because, see, what happened is we still have taxes coming from the Affordable Care Act. We still have taxes coming from the health care law. And millions will be laid off. Hours will be cut back. I mean, decisions will already be made. You see the Papa John's. You see the people are, starting to speak out against the CEOs and everything. But this problem, Greenspan was out of there. This is Bernanke is running the Federal Reserve now. Greenspan's out of there for years. He's been out of there, and when he was in there, we weren't running these type of deficits when he was there.
Absolutely, so. That is not true. That is absolutely not true. Our debt ratio in this country was not lower during Greenspan's administration. What Bernanke is doing is there are two problems. One, he is perpetuating the policies of the Greenspan administration up until through some congressional and White House intercession, he was able to turn. The problem with deficit in this country is this. We kept taking debt from one credit card and putting it on another.
Well, he
but
left
we
in 2006.
Using the original credit card.
Well, Greenspan left in 2006, and the economy was good in 2006. I blame him for the housing bubble. But what I'm stating is that he was in the private Federal Reserve from 1987 to 2006. He left when the housing bubble was at its height. So I blame him for the housing bubble. But if you look back in the history, the debt to GDP ratios, the deficit to GDP ratios, we were not running these type of deficits under Greenspan that we are now running under Ben Bernanke, who's been there since 2006.
Yeah,
so,
but that's not true. You have to understand that nothing changed. It was still the same pail of water.
Are you looking at the debt, the GDP, the deficit ratios that I'm looking at?
Absolutely. And the only thing that has changed is that the under Bernanke, there has not been the kind of cover and shadow.
Well, see, the thing is,
Alan Greenspan was the most dishonest person in the Federal Reserve system.
Well, I blame him for the housing bubble. But what I'm stating is that
the only thing that he couldn't hide was the housing bubble.
Well, during those years he even testified about the caution of there being a housing bubble while we were in the housing bubble.
I used to listen to all his speeches. He knew about the derivatives. The housing bubble, as you call it, was actually a house of dominoes that affected the economic system throughout the Federal Reserve system.
Yeah, well, see, the thing is, a lot of people do not know that gold is at $8 trillion. What has happened is these investors that do the capital investments, they're not investing because of uncertainty. So gold was not at $8 trillion back in 2006.
Gold is at $8 trillion because of wealthy people in this country's greed, because of capitalism drives to what's called a derivative.
That's not true. Most of the gold is owned by Europeans. Most of this gold is not owned by Americans. Australians, European, Swedish, Switzerland, the Swiss.
Most of the gold is owned by European companies, which are shadow companies for Americans. Come on.
No, Europeans are very vastly rich. What I'm stating is we cannot continue to run these debt. My thing is, I understand we're going to end up jumping off the Sears Tower anyway, but if the markets are going to crash, it's the best investment opportunity for the black community to get into the stock market and to build wealth in the middle of the crash. That's what I'm saying. It's inevitable.
You may be talking about a million black people who are able to get into the stock market and make it work for them.
Absolutely. Because the number one problem we have in the black community is that we don't have enough builders and investors. That's how white people maintain their communities through infrastructure. We don't have that. We depend on different communities. So, number one, look, this is going to be the best an opportunity for investing in a lifetime.
Well, let's talk about, if we want to talk about black community wealth and resources, let's talk about the middle class. Because that's the middle class, that is where any black wealth exists. Now, it exists by virtue of employment, not by investment on Wall Street.
Yeah, I'm not really even speaking about the middle class. Most middle class black people aren't even, a lot of them are not even really married to each other. Divorce rates are extremely high in the middle class around black America. The affluent and the rich black, there's very few, and we need more. We need more affluent, we need more rich black people in this country. But see, when you're existing inside of a white society, white supremacy, you have to use the investment vehicles that they use to obtain their wealth, because you do not have an African infrastructure inside this country.
To you.
Go ahead.
The strategy that you're talking about, if it were potentially possible, it would take another 300 years. Nobody is going to build a stable black community based on investments in Wall Street. They can hardly, barely do it in the upper middle class white community. I'm sorry.
I'm talking about the individual. You're speaking of the collective.
Not everybody is going to invest. I can't deal with the individual.
Yeah, well, the individual, that's what capitalism is based off of, is the rugged individual. So what I'm stating
is that a line of Republican bullcrap that I can't even begin to tell you where it starts and where it ends.
That is the system that we exist in. We can complain about it, or we can prosper off of their innovation.
Well, you know what I'm doing? I'm wishing you a great deal of luck at it. Because we have to deal with the collective. Individualism in our community has not benefited the...
Well, running deficits is not going to benefit the collective either. Look, Alan Green, the elite, the people are telling you we're jumping off the Sears Tower. Now, if folks don't want to have a parachute, that is up to them. If folks don't want to work hard and do what they have to do to make sure they build themselves a parachute, that is on them.
Where are you calling from?
This is Steve from Indianapolis. What I am stating is that we are jumping. It's more than just a fiscal cliff. We're jumping off a Sears Tower. We're jumping off. We're doing stuff that we're going way out there, and we shouldn't be doing that.
The entire
United States of America is jumping off the Sears Tower. And all we have to do is look at the markets. People are not investing. There's no certainty.
People are not investing because they have no money, Steve.
They do. The elite has money to invest.
Okay, the 1 million people you're talking about. And when they invest, where do they reinvest?
Dividends. You still have your affluent and your upper middle class as well.
Doing what with their dividends?
We have to create investment opportunities.
How does that keep black people from jumping off the Sears Tower?
Well, the thing is, that's what I'm stating. You have to work hard enough to build yourself
a parachute.
Do you think
black people don't work hard?
Everybody is not going to invest.
Let me ask you another question.
Everybody's not going
to
do it.
If we were to say black wealth in this country, that there are a million, do you think they're not investing in the stock market? Do you think Oprah is putting her money under the mattress?
We need more black people to invest. It's more than just black people.
Let me tell you about the people that I know that invest in the stock market, the black people. And I know quite a few people who play the market. Not play the market as a scheme to get rich, but play the market as a smart way of investing their money. They're taking the dividends every 5 or 6 months to pay college tuition, to bring down the mortgage, the cost of the principal and the mortgage in their house. They're doing it to invest in long-term health care plans. That's what they're doing with the dividends, the small dividends. That's how small the dividends are, Steve.
Well, we're talking about the opportunity of a lifetime. When things are really bad, that is a great opportunity.
For people who have the money, you are not getting that the majority of black people in this country don't have any money.
I already understand that. That's what I'm stating. People, if they don't want to take advantage of the opportunity, they don't have to.
Are you a broker?
No, I am not. I am simply stating that the country is going to jump. The probability is very high off of the Sears Tower.
Let me give you the good news about what's happening on the Sears.
And the good news about that
tower.
If we do jump.
Let me give you the good news. I'm gonna give you the good news.
Yeah.
Ain't no black people up there because ain't no black people got enough money to be worrying about personal deficit and debt. People are trying to hold on to their jobs.
That's what I'm saying. Millions of people are going to lose their jobs. Foreclosures are going to be high next year.
You know why Papa John's is laying off people? Can I tell you why Papa John's is laying off people?
I know why, because their profit margins are very small.
That's bullshit, Steve.
It's true.
Papa
it
John's is laying off people in this way. They're shifting people from full-time employment to part-time employment.
Absolutely.
So that
you know
they
why?
Don't have to
because
provide
the loophole
benefits.
In the Obamacare.
Papa John's had an 18% growth margin this year.
Yeah, what I'm stating
don't
is they're
the
going
hype.
To do what
Papa
they're
John's,
going to.
Mr. Papa John's and his estate and his 18% growth margin this year under an Obama administration with the same deficit and debt ratio you're talking about is bringing most of his employees to part-time so that he can take home $120 million a year in as salary.
Okay, I understand
that. And
that
he can play the political theater game.
Absolutely, I understand that. But what I'm stating is, okay, we do not live in a communist nation. We do not live in a communist country. Meaning the government does not own the resources of production. We do not live in a communist country. We live in a capitalist nation. So if there's no profit, there is no incentive to invest. Look at the Twinkie company, Hostess, for example.
Then,
look at the Twinkie
but
company.
But you have to understand the background of that.
If there's no incentive to invest, that money will be going either in gold, it'll go overseas, it'll be invested someplace else.
Steve, what you're mixing up is that these people are playing a game and having people like you believe that there is corporations have had, on the average, and I'm an MIT Sloan School of Management graduate.
I can tell you what industries have the highest profit margins. They are the banking sector and the big pharma industry. They have the highest profit margin. Your local restaurant does not have. They are not making bank.
Papa John's is no local restaurant.
Not like big pharma is. Not like the pharmaceutical. They're not having that high of a profit margin.
Because you're talking about what you're comparing apples and oranges. Hey,
and
Steve,
if there's no profit, what is the incentive to keep the company running? Do we live in a communist nation? That is my question for you.
You're buying the bullshit. I got to go because I got some other calls.
Okay.
But you need to listen to more than Alan Greenspan.
Once we live in a communist nation, then I will agree with you. Until then, we do not live in a communist nation.
Well,
God bless, and have a good night.
Here's the memo, Steve. The memo is this. Capitalism, if a business is failing in America, it's because capitalism isn't working. 773, you're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for your call.
Well, good evening, Janice.
Well, good evening, Alpha. Did you play your market today?
Well, I couldn't help it, no.
And then I knew you were going to call because then he called up the Twinkie thing. And I'm telling you, I called out for my last fried Twinkie.
Let me tell Steve in Indianapolis when he says there's no more capital. Hostess Cake is a $2 billion a year industry. Wait a minute. You've got this, these hedge fund managers, these equity groups, Silver Point and Monarch, who bought Hostess Cake, Wonder Bread. They then leveraged all of the assets in the company and paid themselves, they banged them. I don't understand what people like this Steve in Indianapolis, they don't get it. They tripled the salary of the CEO to $2.5 million from $600,000, something to that effect.
Well, the CEO of Papa John's took $123 million home. And I ain't mad at him.
So I'm simply saying, and like I said, I worked for these people for 27 years. I was a steward. I was involved in negotiations. The union gave back money, gave up salary for 5 contracts straight. Then they turned around and they approached the bakers after they had leveraged and sucked all of the money out of the company that they possibly could, they made it the third rail for anyone else to come along and purchase them. When no one else would buy them because they were so heavy with debt, they offered the bakers a contract that was not just insulting, but cut their income by a third and still had them paying heavily into their health care. Now, when you get right down to it.
But you know, one of the things before you go on, Alpha, that, and I hope Steve is still listening, and I wasn't trying to, he's entitled to his opinion, but one of the things is that this fiscal cliff bullshit, it's bullshit.
Well, it's not
just being played by congressional Republicans to hold the gun at the heads of Democrats, and the Democrats are the town leaders dutifully laying their weapons down, as written as Richard Eskow wrote in the Campaign for America's Future op-ed.
Well, look at it. How did this fiscal cliff come about? When the Republicans refuse to do what every predecessor of theirs has done since the 20th century, and
that's
raised the debt ceiling. They saw an opportunity to hold this nation hostage and cripple the credit of this nation by trying to ransom spending cuts. All
mm-hmm.
of a sudden,
mm-hmm.
after Republicans have given us all of this debt, Ronald Reagan increased the debt by 189%, Papa Bush by 55%, George Bush by 115%. Bill Clinton increased the debt by 35%, and Barack Obama has increased the debt by 16%. Now, I know that won't go well with Steve in Indianapolis because he doesn't believe that Obama took the two Bush tax cuts, the two wars, and the health Medicare plan and added it to
the brought them out of the closet.
And it makes no sense. When you have people, and, you know, I can respect his knowledge for what he calls the market and his so-called, I'm going to tell these people to get their money and get it into the stock market. What I'm simply saying to you is that when you get people of this ilk, they don't believe in things like it was Bush's fault. You got to stop blaming Bush. Well, Hitler did it, Manson did it, and Madoff did it. And we don't stop talking about their crime. They
Madoff. Wasn't he playing? You know, the thing is, I'm not a critic of people. I mean, I haven't accounted, I'm not going to say where the account is, and I play with a little bit of money, and I call myself reading the research and all, you know, and but you've got to have millions. It takes money to make money. And when you're talking about black people, and I said a million, and I think I was being
very
generous. Yes.
Very.
But the thing is that you're absolutely right, and I like to bring it down for the audience, and in terms that they can understand, is the debt ceiling is you decide that the washer and dryer that's 25 years old has to be replaced, and even though you are struggling with paying your current bills, it's something that has to happen. So you might have to take $5 and say, okay, we have to save $5 less, and we have to try to bring down the food bill by $10, and then we, you know, have to say the vacation can't be $2,500 this year. It has to be $1,000 this year to get the washer and dryer, because without the washer and dryer, you're talking about taking the clothes to the wash and fold place, and that's going to cost $55 a week for the four children, or you're talking about going to the laundromat, and that means that you're going to have to get a babysitter. I mean, that's how this thing is being played out. And that's how we have to begin to think about it. And you're absolutely right, Alpha, that this is another obstruction to bring a train wreck to the Obama administration. And we have to all see it that way.
Well, Janice, let me say this. When
the thing is, you can't read. I am going to tell you, Alpha, I just want to make this point, Alpha, and then you can tell me. But you can't read the Wall Street Journal and think that you're getting all the information that you need, that you are not getting information which is biased. You can't read the New York Times by itself. You have to inform it with some other stuff. Otherwise, and you know, and I always say this to you out there, that if you're not reading a host of a lot of stuff, If you're listening to what you hear on ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN Money, and CBS Money, you're going to get brain damage. And then at the end of the day, trying to figure out what the hell happened. Okay, Alpha, I'm sorry. I just had to say that. You know, it's Saturday night open mic, and I got my James Brown on.
You done?
My Etta James on. How about that?
Can I get a word in edgewise here? Let me just, you know, Janice, this goes, I agree with what you think, but this goes to a point where you always have this intellectual who sits out there and believes that somehow he sits on a higher throne of knowledge because he has a degree here or there, or he understands a certain part of the market. And if he understands the market as he claims, he knows that the market is rigged against the little investor. He should know that the market is set up for the corporate hedge fund and private equity or vulture capitalists. He made that statement of supposed to say there's not being enough people to invest in the business. There were plenty of people investing in the business, but they had loaded it up and they had made it such a poison pill to buy the operation, you would start so deep in debt that you would not be able to survive. All of those people, the equity, the Silver Point and Monarch, they made millions. And I think that my friend Steve in Indianapolis, he didn't know that. So that exposed what he is talking about as just rhetoric, mindless rhetoric that comes across as so, you know, it makes you think, is he a troll? Does he really believe that somebody is going to take what he says at face value when he knows not what he says? He can talk about Alan Greenspan and ratio to debt, and you know, that doesn't cook that cake. That dog won't hunt. And if people like that who will call into a show as if they have a better plan, a better idea, I can even understand him saying that when the stock market blows up, and it will blow up, yeah, and the sun's going to come up too eventually. You can't sit back and take credit for the rooster crowing in the morning with these, the stock market is going to crash. It's going to crash as long as it's a stock market. It will go through a cycle and a bubble. And that's just the bottom line. And when you have folks...
Well, Steve was trying to lace it with some distorted understanding of self-determination, let's say. I mean, I'm just giving him that. And I think that why he would bring up Alan, I think Alan Greenspan is one of the crooks in this country.
And it's when he was before the Congress testifying, he sat there like an idiot going, I didn't see it coming.
Coming, just, exactly.
He's a top financial guy and you don't see it coming? I mean, nobody has that crystal ball, but I wonder if Steve knows.
He was a liar.
This Ayn Rand worshippers on this planet, next to Ron Paul, Rand Paul, and Paul Ryan. I wonder if Steve knows that.
Well, you know, one of the things that we do know is that without a foundation and a real understanding of how this country works, and if you embrace, and this is, you know, this is a problem in our community, if you embrace the notion that wealth only comes in money, you fall for stuff that Alan Greenspan has to say. And if you only started trying to struggle and understand what's happening in this country yesterday, and the first person that came along was Alan Greenspan, then that's what you go with, Alpha, and you know that.
Well, it gets to a point where it gets laughable that you have people who actually think they're, I guess, giving good advice or however they want to word it.
Well, I think it's great that if somebody has $25,000 hanging around and they feel they want to play Russian roulette, playing the stock market with it, more power to them.
Well, it is that.
As a matter of fact, one of my favorite online games is an investment game. And I ain't won in that one yet, so I watch my little couple of hundred dollars. I mean, if you want to put $2,000 into Microsoft, for instance, Microsoft, and sit it and watch it for, nurse it for about 3 months, and decide this is as far as I can go with them, let it go up a little bit, and then sell. But that's for people who have $2,000 or $3,000 to play with. Most black people do not have $2,000 or $3,000 to play around with. You've got to have some certainty about what's going to happen to that money.
Well, I hope he didn't buy it.
The other thing that he doesn't take into account, that this is all a game. You know, for instance, the only people who have paid for the recent depression that this country has experienced are people who were upside down because of predatory and bad mortgages created by the derivative game. The other are federal employees. He's talking about communism. You had a Congress who forced the president to have a whole group of people, a whole market of people called federal employees who got no salary increases by virtue of a dictate from Congress for 3 years.
These people who scream communism and social, they don't even know the definition of it.
Exactly.
And they see that the people who they side with, support, craven with, are the same people who are doing what they're accusing everyone else of. Just like you put up, you know, they steered these people into these the loans that they knew that they couldn't afford. The same people are the ones saying that...
not only steered them, they fraudulently placed them in mortgages. Not only could they, if the mortgages that were, that never should have existed, forget about, you know, I think that's a myth that most of the housing crash had to do with mortgages that people couldn't afford. I think that they had to do with fraudulently executed mortgages where interest rates and other fees were placed into mortgages after people who could afford what on the face of it seemed that they would have to pay.
And I would suggest to Steve that if he's still listening, Google Inside Job by Charles Ferguson and watch it. And watch it. Because it started in Iceland. And the difference is they've repaired. Iceland has repaired their economy.
And not only have they repaired it, they have made, they have held individuals accountable for
at least a thousand of them.
Exactly.
People in jail that perpetrated that canard, that fraud on the
because,
on the money market.
Because Alan Greenspan did nothing more than what George Bush I and George Bush II told him to do. And the deal was made in the back rooms about how the Federal Reserve and Wall Street regulation needed to be put in place so that the greed and the wealthy, greedy people in this country and corporations could benefit by victimizing the American taxpayers and the American people. Alpha.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. What's your take on what is going to happen in December around the, since Steve brought it up, the debt ceiling?
The fiscal cliff?
Mm-hmm.
The fiscal cliff is a hoax. Like I said, it was manufactured by them refusing to raise the debt ceiling. And then when they force the sequestration, because everybody said, well, okay, let's do it this way, since the super committee couldn't agree.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we'll face sequestration. They were kicking the can down the road. Sequestration, jump off the cliff, come on. Let's all hold hands and jump off the cliff because it will cost poor people less than this grand bargain that Barack Obama is planning for us. You don't put Social Security on the table because Social Security doesn't add a dime to the debt. Social Security is self-sufficient. It's $2.7 trillion surplus and will pay out every dime through the year 2037. And if you have to do anything to tweak it, raise the cap on how of 106,000, 110,000. Raise that cap to a half a million, and Social Security will be solvent for the next 75, 80 years. That's ridiculous. That's as bad as what the post office is going through. And if you really have a problem with Medicare, allow the Medicare to bargain to take bids on prescription drugs. That cuts it down. With the fix, with the $716 billion, they've already extended the life of Medicare for 8 years. And leave Medicaid alone. And if you really want to do something to help Medicare and Medicaid, get rid of the pimps. And the pimps are the insurance companies that are for profit, that take 20 to 25% off the top for profits and operation, whereas Medicare and Medicaid has an administrative cost of no more than 5 to 7%. If you want to fix something,
Don't. I mean, if you want to talk about more pimps in that system, then you need to start looking at. I think the government needs to investigate these large practices. I mean, if you go to Florida, you've got practices with medical practices that offer specific kinds of insurance companies. The other is ARP. ARP is nothing but an insurance company. I mean, and there is no accountability for organizations like Humana, where the what they pay out in terms of subscriber benefits is less than the premiums.
It's a racket. It's nothing
It is. It's absolutely a racket, and nobody is willing to touch it. How can you have a medical practice that has over 200 doctors and you have worked out a deal with the insurance companies and with the Medicare system that a subscriber can only see a doctor within that practice? No referrals outside of the practice is covered. We're going to have to get Wendell Potter back in here. Because I don't think that there has been enough focus on that kind of reform.
Well, Janice, thank you for letting me have a little say. And I enjoyed your program this evening.
Well, thank you very much, and I enjoyed your program last night. But nobody's talking about this issue about the Latino community taking the spoils, the victory spoils in this election.
Let them stand up and take as many bows as they want. One thing we have to agree upon, they can't do it alone, and neither can the black community. If we don't work as a group, and they got the numbers. The numbers show it. Did they turn out at a higher rate to vote than blacks? I'm not talking about the ones that did turn out, the percentage. Talking about the...
Well, that was at 71%. No, they did not. The other is that the number is an artificial one because when you look at the population numbers, you're not talking about a rate at which that it is beneficial or empowering, because you're not talking about eligible voters. When you take out people who are ineligible to vote, and I'm talking about age, you're talking a whole different ballgame.
Well, I say we need each other.
Yeah.
They can stand up.
I think that one of the things that we've got to do, Alpha, is we've got to frame the narrative of the engagement.
Well, we can't.
It is all a bigger part of this re-engineering of divide.
Well, if the media creates this divide and we fall for it by raising this or responding to it, I don't care how this president was reelected. He was reelected with a coalition, a rainbow coalition, Asians, Hispanics, blacks, thoughtful whites, and that's America.
Yeah. Okay, Alpha. We'll see what these alliances mean. These alliances haven't meant very much, it seems to me.
It means that Barack Obama will do 4 more years. Other than that, he blows the new.
But it wasn't an aligned coalition.
I don't care.
It just happened. I know you don't care.
I don't care. It happened.
How's the football going this season?
What?
The football.
Yeah, the top 2 teams just lost in college. I was sitting here watching that, and Adrian Brenner knocked out the champion to retain the, to get the lightweight belt. I'm still on top of it. Thank you, Janice.
Thank you, Alpha. Thank you very much. And I'm going in the chat room. Navoxor is with us tonight, and we heard from Doc Don. We thank him for his call. I saw Della Prosa. Oh, by the way, most of you may want to know that I did talk with Michelle Odom, the Our Common Ground Media production administrator, who was made homeless by the Hurricane Sandy, has found a place and is getting settled in, and she is safe and trying to piece her life together. East Coast Sam, thank you for joining us. Nathaniel Gilchrist, you have just become one of the family. We've got YJ in the house. Hey, waving Wiley. And Big Wes is with us tonight. Heard Big Wes on another talk radio. You all know I listen to talk radio all day and all night, and I heard Big Wes on one of the on one of our my colleagues' show. Showing out, you know you were showing out. So we thank our guests that are in our chat room tonight for being with us. This is our monthly open mic Saturday night at Our Common Ground. Don't forget, on Wednesday, Solar Fire with Dr. Matthew V. Johnson. He'll be back live. Last week he was away, and we decided to give him a break. Here at Our Common Ground next Saturday night, I'll be talking with Dr. Patricia, oh, Lord. Oh, God. She is the, I'll tell you who she is before I tell you. She's the president of the Association of Black Psychiatrists, and I am so embarrassed that I can't remember her name. Newton, Dr. Patricia Newton will be with us next week. Week after that, we'll be meeting with an old friend, Tim Wise, the anti-racism author, leader, thought leader. And Alpha will be away on Friday after Thanksgiving, but we'll be right here. I'm Janice Graham, and thank you so much for being with us. We'll try to keep things going here at Our Common Ground. Thank you. Have a good weekend, and have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you for being here with us at Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, and for me and for my co-host, Alpha of the Alpha Show, we appreciate your listenership and your loyalty. We'll see you next week, 10 p.m., here on Our Common Ground.
Another one of those